You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Tasha Howe's third novel, Five-Star Billionaire, follows the lives of five immigrants from different walks of life trying to make their fortunes in Shanghai, China's largest city, and it is about how their paths intersect. The novel was long listed for the Booker Prize. It has been getting rave reviews in this country. It's published by Spiegel & Grau, and I'm very pleased that it has brought Tasha Howe to our show today. Hello.
Hi, great to be here.
You've lived in a number of interesting places, born in Taipei, Taiwan. That's the capital of Taiwan. You grew up in Malaysia. Now you're in London. So why did you decide to set this novel in Shanghai?
Well, for lots of reasons, partly because I was really intrigued by the way Malaysians were leaving their homes to seek better lives in China. Now, traditionally, people leaving Malaysia is not a big deal. Everyone's done that. So people of my generation, for example, always dreamed of going to the big cities of the West, London or New York, principally. But I just began to notice this shift occurring about 10 years ago. And the big cities of the West were no longer the default option, and that young people were looking more and more to China.
Well, would they mostly be ethnic Chinese? Because all of South Asia is there are ethnic Chinese in all of the countries of South Asia, and many of them have lived rather uncomfortable lives in recent years.
Exactly,
and in Vietnam, particularly.
Yeah, no, absolutely, and you know, and even in countries like Malaysia and Indonesia, so it was very easy for it is very easy for ethnic Chinese to go to China, and increasingly, I think, you know, China has been very successful at giving this illusion that it is the promised land.
Well, could this novel have been set in any large city that draws young people hoping to make their fortunes, London, Los Angeles, Mexico City, New York? Or is Shanghai in a class by itself?
In some ways, it's a very universal tale. So, you know, at some level, it is the universal tale of urban migration. But I think that Shanghai is in a class of itself because just because of the pace of change, it is so fast. I mean, it makes any other city I've ever lived in or traveled in seem slow.
And why is it growing so fast? After all, much of the growth seemed to be in Guangzhou, which what used to be called Canton.
Yeah.
And that still is a place where cities suddenly are created and develop populations in the many millions. But is Shanghai special because it has a longer history?
Shanghai has a longer history of it has its own identity. So the Shanghainese are very proud of their own cultural heritage. They see themselves as being the intellectuals of China. And I think this breeds a certain sort of it's very attractive for the foreigner. It's also been it's very open to Westerners in particular. It has a very long history, a long connection with foreigners. And so I think, you know, what we're seeing is a renewal of that traditional form of immigration.
Well, there was a time when there were various foreign enclaves, and in fact, Chinese people weren't even allowed in a few of them. And doesn't that make for a very interesting architectural history in Shanghai? Because there were so many foreigners there doing European-style buildings before the Japanese invasion in 1937?
Exactly. I mean, there's a very big and very attractive French concession, for example, all of which makes for, you know, a very attractive city. Shanghai is about the only city that I know in Asia where one can walk along the streets. One wants to stroll. There's great scale and intimacy.
But there's still new skyscrapers.
There's a huge new section called Pudong, which is, you know, which was just 20 years ago a fishing village and or nothing. And now it's just full of the biggest skyscrapers in the world.
In writing a novel like this, how do you balance writing for people who know the city well with those of us who've never been there?
What I try and do is to inhabit the interior lives of the characters and allow people to experience a city through the eyes of the characters. And so really, you know, it becomes a story about these five young people who go to Shanghai.
All ethnically Chinese from Malaysia.
That's right.
Can you talk about the relationship between China and Malaysia? Why so many people are leaving? Has Malaysia been discriminating against them as Indonesia did, especially when Suharto came to power?
Well, it's a very tangled, very complicated relationship between China and Malaysia. There has been discrimination going on for a long time. But I think it's more nuanced and more difficult than that. I think for me, the great attraction of this story was the irony, the reverse migration, as it were, because all these people were descendants, are descendants of Chinese migrants who came to Malaysia escaping hardship and suffering 100 years ago.
And hoping to make a life for themselves.
Absolutely.
They became, many of them became the merchant class of the various countries that they went to.
Yeah, absolutely. And so these five young people are really the descendants of those merchants who came, you know, 120 years ago.
The novel opens with Phoebe, a young woman from Malaysia who goes to Shenzhen for a restaurant job, finds the restaurant closed, and the friend who promised her the job nowhere to be found. Is that common?
I think that's very common. I think that, you know, China has a way of promising a lot and then dashing your hopes.
And then she goes to Shanghai because she thinks she might do better there?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, she goes for broke. She decides, like a lot of young people, that she's going to aim for the top and see what happens.
Is that where the jobs are? More than in Guangzhou?
Well, I think she's a different kind of person. She decides that, you know, Guangzhou is... there's too much competition in Guangzhou, too much competition from other people just like her. So she decides to reinvent herself and become a classy, sophisticated woman in Shanghai.
Can they get along if they don't speak Mandarin or Shanghainese?
I think if you don't speak any Mandarin at all, I think it's difficult. But, from what I saw, Shanghai is an easy city to operate in, and even if you don't have any Mandarin, it is possible to survive there.
Can you survive on English?
Yeah, there are a lot of Westerners there who have very good lives.
My guest is Ta Shao. His latest novel is Five Star Billionaire. We meet Justin, the son of a wealthy real estate developer who's been sent to Shanghai to expand the family business, although his heart isn't in it. Why is it so important for a family-owned business to have real estate interests in Shanghai?
Well, because I think the rest of Asia has convinced itself that China is where the action is. And so these big conglomerates, you see them, big companies from Malaysia, Singapore, Hong Kong, they're all rushing to cash in on Chinese real estate.
And then there's Gary, who's a teenage pop star who succumbs to the pressures of sudden stardom, a kind of a small-town boy made good. What causes his very public meltdown?
Well, he has won a talent competition, a reality TV show, a pop idol contest, and suddenly plucked from obscurity and sent to China because his agents want him to break the Chinese market. Everyone's desperate to break the Chinese market. And I think that China places so much pressure on the individual to succeed that if you don't, I think the fall is incredibly great. And so he has this big, very public fall from grace and has to reconstruct his life from nothing.
The only character with a non-Western name is the other main female character, Ying Hui. Mm. She's a bohemian-turned-businesswoman and the ex-girlfriend of Justin's brother.
That's right. Her past is entangled with that of Justin's family. They go back a long way to Malaysia. And they come from a very different starting point from, say, Gary and Phoebe, who really come from quite poor, deprived backgrounds. And what I wanted to show with that contrast of characters is that migration means very different things for middle-class people than it does for working-class people. And so all these people have very different experiences of China.
And then there's Walter Chow, the fifth character. He's the billionaire of the title. How did he make his fortune?
Well, we don't quite know. He's a very shadowy character. He is in different ways involved in all their lives, or the lives of the other characters, sometimes tangentially, other times in much more significant ways.
Well, he writes advice books on top of his other ventures. And are they popular in China?
They're hugely popular, hugely popular. In fact, the book is written as a series of chapters dispensing advice on how to get rich.
So your chapter headings are things like choose the right moment to launch yourself, move to where the money is, know when to cut your losses. I'm assuming that you actually borrowed those from books that you found.
Absolutely. I mean, the reason I wanted to write the book in this way was that everywhere I went in China, people were reading these books. if you walked along the streets and saw the stall selling counterfeit books, 80% of them would be self-help books, primarily on how to get rich. And a lot of them, I noticed with great irony, were translated from American titles, which I thought strange because Americans and Chinese always see themselves as polar opposites of each other, and yet they were bonded by this wonderfully kind of optimistic point of view that you could change your life by reading a book.
Kind of the American dream in this case, the Chinese dream. It's been noted that Mohsin Hamid's novel, How to Get Filthy Rich in Rising Asia, also has a self-help theme. The American dream is a vision of middle-class success. Are young Asians more ambitious than that? You get the feeling from your novel that at times they get rather ruthless.
Well, I think that China in particular gives the impression that there is no limit to what you can achieve. And so, you know, for people like Phoebe and Gary who come from, you know, very poor backgrounds, I think they're attracted by this idea that they can totally reinvent themselves.
This book has been compared to The Great Gatsby. Also, a reviewer called you, I'm quoting, a kinder, more sympathetic Somerset Maugham. Others have compared you to Edith Wharton, Kazuo Ishiguro, Tom Wolfe. You see any of that in you?
That's quite a list. I mean, I'm not aware of these comparisons when I write. I mean, my inspirations are much more personal. I mean,
such as.
My literary inspirations are different. I mean, they come from, for this novel, they come from the great sort of epics of the 19th century, like and 18th century in this case, The Dream of the Red Pavilion, which is one of the great Chinese novels. A lot of some Dickens and Balzac. I loved that sense of that urban sprawl, a sense of lots of characters coming together and meeting.
Well, The Dream of the Red Chambers is about a boy who he's kind of favored, but very different from this book, but it's in Chinese. You write in English, don't you?
I do, but I think a lot of my literary inspiration comes from that style of storytelling, which is quite grand in scope and, you know, takes its time to get going. So there is a sort of a classic quality, I think, to my writing.
Your first novel, The Harmony Silk Factory, won the Whitbread Prize. The first novel, also the Commonwealth Book Prize. Both that novel and this one have been long listed for the Booker Prize. Do those prizes matter much to somebody who's trying to establish himself as a writer?
They don't matter to me in a personal sense, because they absolutely do not change how I feel about myself as a writer.
But they help you get better jobs, don't they?
They help me be read in more parts of the world, and it certainly makes my publishers feel better. I mean, I think the reality is that a lot of prizes are good for sales, but I think if you win one of these big prizes, the next day you are exactly the same writer as you were the day before.
Well, this is your third novel. I'm assuming you have another one in the works. I'm not going to ask you what it's about, because writers hate to talk about that, unless you want to.
Well, it's just it's a tiny germ of an idea at the moment, so it could change.
Mm-hmm. Well, this one is complete, getting wonderful reviews, deservedly. It's called Five Star Billionaire. It is published by Spiegel & Grau. My great thanks to Tash Au for being our guest today, T-A-S-H-A-W.
Thanks for having me.
And Tash Au will be reading this Saturday at 4 p.m. at the Asian American Literary Festival, hosted by the Asian American Writers Workshop. It's at Roulette, which is located at 509 Atlantic Avenue in Brooklyn. Up next, Paula Kahumbu and John Hemingway from Wildlife Direct talk about why, despite an international ban, the ivory trade continues. And by the way, China is strongly implicated in that story. Later, we will find out how scientists can make it rain and whether that may help fight drought and crop failures in the future. You're listening to WNYC and WNYC.org.